AAA projects more than 3.1 million people will travel by plane for this Thanksgiving holiday. Will you be among them? We will talk about holiday air travel for Thanksgiving and beyond, and welcome your questions and experiences regarding air passenger rights. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, November 25th. Our guest will have some tips to help us have a smoother flying experience and discuss what the airline industry is doing to keep us happy and where it's coming up short. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Brandon Mixotta, Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, which advocates for fairer customer service and accessibility standards in the airline industry. Good morning. Oops, I always do this. I forget to push the right button before we start. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning, Joy, from a very chilly Manhattan.
And this is a very snowy Madison right now. At least the snow is starting in earnest. We'll only get about an inch or so. That's not what I'm looking forward to, though. So how would you describe the state of flying these days? What's going well? What's not so well?
You know, Joy, I know you've had me on your program several times, and I wish I could come to you today and say that, you know, things are so much better for the traveling public. But unfortunately, I would say they're pretty much the same as they have been for the last couple of years. You're looking at fewer seats offered by the airline as a whole. You're looking at higher fares. You're looking at more fees for things like your luggage, certain select seats, internet, stuff like that. And overall, you're looking at a pretty steady line of customer complaints against the airline. So overall, I would say we're pretty much in the same boat we were in a couple of years ago.
Well, you know, AAA is projecting 3.14 million people are going to be traveling by plane for the Thanksgiving holiday. That's down 3.7% from last year. Any guesses as to why fewer of us are flying for Thanksgiving?
Well, it could be just the dates that they've selected, because according to Travelocity, from November 22nd to December 2nd, if you're planning on flying this year, you'll be joining about 25 million people worldwide. So that's a heck of a lot of people, and that's a heck of a lot of stress, too, when you're getting to the airport. As anyone who's ever flown has known, the more people trying to fly just means more aggravation, more stress, a lot of other things. So, you know, one of the first things I can tell your listeners is if you are flying this holiday season, you're best to be plan ahead, get to the airport a little earlier, go there with the right, you know, attitude in mind, because, you know, that smile will go a long way when you're dealing with ticket agents who are probably extremely tired and extremely cranky.
Yeah. And I've heard that Thanksgiving is the busiest time of year for flying. Does this tend to be when bad service or inconveniences happen the most?
Well, it's not only the busiest, it's also naturally the most expensive. The average ticket price this year to fly on Thanksgiving is $415. That's actually up 7% from last year. And it's just one of those holidays where we like to go places. And naturally, we want to go to our family and spend time with our family. So it's the reality that we have to deal with when we travel. And if you are indeed going to book air travel during the Thanksgiving holiday, I think you have to just know that that's what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah. So has anything, you say pretty much the same, but nothing over the past year or so has happened that's good for passengers?
Well, there's a couple things that are good for passengers, and it's not all bad with respect to the airline. The airlines are definitely offering more choices for passengers with respect to, amenities that you can purchase, whether it's food on the plane, if you were looking for Wi-Fi on the plane, you know, certain types of seating on the plane. So they're definitely responding to passengers in that regard. But you have to, you know, buyer beware, you're going to pay for those services. So, when you look at the average ticket price, which I just mentioned, $415, that does not include all these other ancillary fees that the airlines will charge you for. So you have to be wary of that. So the airlines are definitely responding to the, you know, some of the amenities that we are requesting. And that said, the Department of Transportation has issued a couple of regulations over the last couple of years that are definitely designed to protect our rights as airline passengers. So, you know, there is a little bit that's good, but there's a little bit that's not so good. So I think overall we're in the same place.
I miss, so is there, what's a regulation or rule that has been issued to protect us?
Well, there was a recent one, actually, as recent as 2 weeks ago for passengers with disabilities. And it has to do with the kiosks. You're going to start seeing improvements for kiosks for people who are blind, who have low vision. A certain number of kiosks at the airports have to be fully accessible for travelers with who are blind or have low vision. Travelers who use wheelchairs, typically the Air Carrier Access Act only allows one wheelchair in stowage. Now they're going to allow up to two wheelchairs in stowage on certain aircraft. So there's been a continual stream of regulations that are coming out from the Department of Transportation that are aimed at improving accessibility for passengers with disabilities, but also improving air travel and customer rights for all passengers. And I think that's a good sign for us.
That's positive. I wanted to get your take on this this recent news story, this episode involving U.S. Airways, a blind man, and his guide dog that resulted in a Philadelphia to Long Island flight being canceled. Apparently, there was a delay at the tarmac. The airline says the guide dog became restless, which it saw as a safety risk to the crew, though other passengers say that was not the case. The blind man and the flight attendant got into a heated exchange, and the blind man and the dog got booted off the flight. The other passengers complained in support of the man, and at that point, the airline canceled the flight, and the passengers were bussed to their destination. So U.S. Airways says it's investigating. What's your assessment here?
Joy, that man is my friend Albert Rizzi. If you know Al, I find it very hard to believe the flight attendant's take on what happened. Al is probably one of the most pleasant demeanors of any man you could meet. And I think the fact that you have 30 people who got off a plane in solidarity behind Al on this episode demonstrates what happened. And to me, I'm all for U.S. Airways conducting an investigation. I know the Department of Transportation will be conducting an investigation. But if indeed this incident went down the way Al is claiming, that's just completely, completely unacceptable. If anyone has ever been around a service dog, you know that these dogs are trained, and they're trained extremely well. And the allegation or the claim by this flight attendant that this dog was being unruly or out in the aisleway is just extremely hard to fathom. I actually, at one point in time, served on the board of directors of Carolina Canines, which trains service dogs to place in the homes of people living in the Carolinas. And it's amazing at what these dogs are trained to do. They're very obedient. So I think if this did indeed happen, it's a very troubling thing. And in my private conversations with Al, what he's really looking for to come out of this is a learning experience and an educational experience and using it as a platform to be able to further educate airline personnel on how you are really supposed to treat passengers with disabilities, and that is with dignity and respect. And quite frankly, I think that's what any passenger would like, how they would like to be treated with dignity and respect.
We are talking with Brandon Mexada, Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, and we are talking about airline passenger rights. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming any experiences you may have had flying recently. Maybe you had something happen to you that you want to run by, Brandon. Are you planning on doing any flying this Thanksgiving or in the near future? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. When we come back from this short break, I'm going to ask Brandon about the possibility of the rule banning the use of cell phones in flight being lifted. The FAA is considering this, and it'll be up to the airlines whether or not you can use your cell phones in flight. Do you want to? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar.
We are talking about flying over the holidays. The Thanksgiving holiday period is the busiest, if one of the busiest, if not the busiest time for air travel. Are you going to be among those traveling this Thanksgiving holiday or beyond? We are talking with a airline passenger rights advocate who has some tips to help us have a smooth flying experience. Plus, we're talking about some issues in the news involving the airline industry and passengers, and we're welcoming your questions and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What questions do you have about how the airlines or airports or security work? And your rights as a passenger. No one have any questions or experiences to share? We'd love to hear from you. Our guest is Brandon Mixotta, Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, which advocates for fair customer service and accessibility standards in the airline industry. So, Brandon, are you going to be using your... Do you think we will be using our cell phones in flight on flights in the future?
Joy, that's a good question. The Federal Communication Commission is considering a proposal to allow the use of mobile devices. And I want to make sure that your listeners understand this has not been approved. This is only a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not going to happen anytime soon because for this to go from proposal to law takes quite a long time because there's a whole process, a regulatory process that they have to go through. So we're probably looking at some time before this would actually go into effect. But it will be very interesting to see how the FCC decides on this rule. We have not taken a stand on the rule because we kind of find that the passengers are actually, in many respects, divided on it. Me, personally, would I use my phone? Probably not. When I travel by train on the Acela, I always get on the quiet car, but it's interesting because when you're on the quiet car on the train, you're not supposed to use your cell phone. But, Joy, I have never once been on a quiet car where somebody was not on their cell phone. So, you know, it's funny. These rules are only as effective as we as the passengers obey them and to the agents, the flight attendants or train agents actually enforce them.
Yeah, I noticed that. While the FAA has not approved this change yet, I think it was Delta that already announced we're not allowing people to talk on their cell phones. Maybe because there are a lot of people complaining about the possibility of that noise pollution. But using a cell phone, a smartphone for other things seems we will pay for that privilege, though, right?
Oh, I'm sure we will. But keep in mind, too, back to your original point, just simply because the FCC approves this rule and says, okay, travelers can now use their smartphones in flight, does not mean that the airlines have to allow us to do it. Mm-hmm. It'll be left to each individual airline to decide. So you may be on Delta, and Delta's saying, no, you can't, but you can be on Southwest, and maybe Southwest says, yes, you can. So it'll be left to the individual airlines. Personally, I think that's probably the better way to do it, and because the airlines... You know, their whole business is based on selling tickets to you and me. And if we don't want to listen to people, you know, gabbering on their cell phones, they're not going to adopt a policy that says you can use your cell phone.
Let's take some calls. We have Danielle in Appleton with us. Hi, Danielle.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I had a question. I was flying on a plane from San Antonio to Wisconsin, and I was quitting smoking at the time, and I started puffing on my electronic cigarette. One of the ladies across the aisle gave me a dirty look, and she told a flight attendant on me, and he came over to me, and he said, I'll have to put it away or he'd take it from me. And I tried to explain that I'm not smoking a real cigarette. This is about 3 years ago, and there's no tobacco in it. I was wondering if that's legal.
Yeah, what are the rules when it comes to that, Brandon, or our rights when it comes to that?
I have, Danielle, I have actually heard of not only that on airlines, but just about everywhere. I think, increasingly seeing businesses adopting the same rules that apply to tobacco-based smoking to the non-tobacco-based smoking, the electric cigarettes. So I don't know the intricacies of, you know, how the law and how they, you know, can differentiate those two, whether it's just left to the individual business. But you see that quite frequently in restaurants, movie theaters, and now, as you're telling us, airlines. So that was the first I've heard of it, but it does not surprise me.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Danielle. We did a show on the e-cigarette not too long ago, and there are some communities that are treating the e-cigarette like a regular cigarette, in part because there haven't been enough studies on the vapor that they emit.
Oh, okay. I know it's like liquid nicotine, but it's not a tobacco product technically.
Right.
There's no tobacco. I mean, so I don't know. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. And the expert we talked to was actually an advocate for the e-cigarette and thought it was a very good tool to help people quit smoking. And it was not, the nicotine itself was not dangerous, but there haven't been apparently the studies on the vapor, so that's why.
Well, I like the way Danielle said told her story that she got told on. That was kind of cute. So next time you're going to have to just be a little more discreet, I guess.
And hide
in the laboratory. I don't know, but you know, all joking aside, you know, when you're flying, when these rules are in place, they take them very seriously. I have a friend who he's one of those people that when he sleeps and he wakes up, he's really out of it for about the first 10 or 15 minutes. And when he was flying on a red eye and he woke up from the nap to go use the laboratory, and he wasn't thinking, you know, all the wires weren't totally connecting, and he lit up a cigarette. And as soon as he lit up the cigarette, he realized, oh my God, I just lit up a cigarette in a plane.
Oops.
And there were two armed police officers waiting for him at the airport because naturally the flight attendant smelled the smoke and whatever. So they take it very seriously. So I think if there are still these questions over what are the differences between tobacco, based cigarettes and the e-cigarettes, I think that's the reason why you're going to see a lot more people treating them the same.
So, Brendan, I wanted to also ask you about your own association's call for the lifting of the ban on the larger liquid items on that we can take on carry-ons. You want the TSA to get rid of this 3-ounce deal?
Yes, we do. Julie, you know, you go back to studies that were conducted by the FBI, we're almost 10 years ago. The amount of liquid that would be required to either blow up a plane or cause severe structural damage to a plane, you're not going to have it by a passenger bringing it on a plane. It's just not going to happen, which is why they modified the rule. We look at our brothers and sisters over the pond in the European Union. They're actually looking at doing away with the liquid restrictions. The fact of the matter is, you know, TSA has a very important job, and that is to protect us. And we feel that they should be given the tools to do so, but they should be concentrating on those security measures which indeed are going to make us safe. The liquid ban falls under what some security experts like to call security theater. It makes us feel safer, but in actuality, it does nothing to make us safer. So that's the reason why we're calling for an end to the ban, not because we think it's inconvenient or, you know, God, I just spent this $1.99 on my 20-ounce Diet Coke. Why should I have to throw it away? You know, keep in mind that when you go through security and they make you throw away your bottle of water because they don't want liquid on the plane, Joy, what's the very first thing you see when you get past security and you walk into the gate? You probably see a convenience store where you can go buy that exact same thing they just made you throw away.
Right.
So, it's a silly regulation. It does not do anything to make us safer. Therefore, we would rather the TSA agents be engaged in screening activities that will actually make a difference and make us safer in the air.
What's the process now, though? Is there a consideration of lifting this ban?
I don't know if there's a consideration. As you know, we have been a vocal critic of some of TSA's security screenings, and not that we're criticizing the TSA agents. We feel that TSA as an agency has too often adopted a one-size-fits-all, very rigid approach to security. And that can't be the way air security works. It has to be very fluid, recognizing what's happening in the airports and what's happening at the time. And that's what gets why we get back to. If you look at the data, the ban on liquids just simply is one of those things that does not make us safer. But yet, TSA seems to be holding on to it with dear life. So I don't know if there will be any time soon an effort to do that, but we're certainly putting pressure on TSA to do that. And again, focus on the things that will make us safer.
We are talking about holiday air travel and our rights with Brandon Mixotta, Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights. And we're welcoming your questions for him or your experiences flying over the holidays or otherwise. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Hey, tomorrow at this time, we're going to be talking about one of the most important aspects of Thanksgiving, pies. That's tomorrow at this time. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about airline passenger rights this hour, getting prepared for the holiday travel season. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, November 25th. We are talking with the head of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights. He's here to answer your questions or respond to your air travel experiences, good or bad. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Brandon Mixotta, Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, which advocates for fairer customer service and accessibility standards in the airline industry. We just heard our weather forecast for the state of Wisconsin for today. Snowy with a chance of freezing drizzle statewide, highs between 30 and 35. Looks like at least right now the extended forecast says that it's going to be clear around the Thanksgiving holiday itself. So that's good news here in Wisconsin. But Brandon, it's a different story for the East Coast. I saw that you're going to get nailed, aren't you?
Well, it's not only with what we're expecting here on the East Coast. We're already seeing some of the effects of the weather. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's already over 300 flights that have been canceled. And that weather system is moving this way toward the east. And there's actually two weather systems, and it's really going to depend on, naturally, we wait and see what happens with these weather systems. But if they do collide, and that is one of the weather models, there could be a really big ripple effect. And if you think about Atlanta and Charlotte on the East Coast, they're really the gateways of travel on the east in the southern parts of the United States. If you have any connection, chances are, no matter what airline you're on, if you're not flying direct, you're probably, going through one of those two airports. So you could be in for a very messy Thanksgiving travel season as well.
Oh, that's too bad. So is there anything we can do to prepare ourselves for that?
Well, we have always said that we obviously do not blame the airlines for bad weather. Nobody can control the weather. But we do hold the airlines responsible when bad weather happens. How do they react and how do they treat their passengers? No passenger, I think, wants to be on a plane in unsafe travel conditions. But if you're going to be stuck on the ground, how responsive is that airline and its customer service team to the needs of the passengers who have then been stranded? But, my advice to you is, as I was saying earlier, show up to the airport earlier with a positive attitude. You naturally have to watch the weather. And if possible and you have the option to change your flight, maybe look at changing your flight, flying a little earlier or flying a little later. But if that is not an option or you don't feel like paying the ridiculous change of flight fees that some of the airlines charge now and you have to stick to your guns on your original flight, just be prepared that, this weather system may happen and it may cause some delays.
Ann in Duluth, Minnesota is with us. Hello, Ann.
Hi, I'm flying to Miami later this week, excuse me, and then on to Havana, Cuba. which is exciting, but I'm going to check on luggage, which normally I don't, because I've had too many friends who have had bad experiences with lost luggage. Now, I inventoried what I'm putting in the suitcase, but in addition to that, if it gets lost, what is my best recourse? Because the friends I've had, just, it's gone. They don't get satisfaction, no matter how persistent they are, and that kind of scares me.
The entire piece of luggage is lost, and they don't get it back, Anne.
Right, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
You know, they've called the airline, and they say, well, do you have receipts for what was in it? And it's like, really? I bought that 3 years ago. No, I don't.
What's the passenger's recourse for lost luggage, Brandon?
Well, Anne, it's always good to be prepared in advance. And whereas I can't, you know, tell you any companies because I don't want to come as an endorsement, go online and look at, there are services that you actually, almost like if you're shipping a FedEx, and they come to your house or they have drop-off centers where you can actually mail your luggage to your final destination. You probably will pay a little bit more, but in light of, you know, the fact that these baggage fees keep going up, it may be about the same cost depending on where you're flying. If you're going to Cuba, being that the luggage is leaving the United States, I would suspect it's probably going to be a little bit more. But that may be something to consider rather than checking it in with the airline, actually having it shipped to your destination in advance. And there are numerous companies that's what they do. That's the whole business model. If that's not an option and indeed you're going to be checking your baggage in, if there's something that's truly valuable, you really shouldn't be checking it in anyways. You should have it on your person. And, you know, you're allowed one carry-on plus one personal item. If it's a small enough personal item, you could probably put it in your purse. If it's not, maybe it's a necklace or a blouse, anything like that, you know, you should probably have it on your carry-on. I mean, the airlines do make it very clear that they cannot be held responsible for lost items. I mean, they do their best to either compensate you or whatever. I've heard horror stories, and I've also heard other stories where the airlines really went above and beyond and did a wonderful job at taking care of the passenger, either finding the lost item or compensating him for that. But if that doesn't help you, if you're one of those passengers who has your luggage lost, and you know you're not getting anywhere with the airline. So my advice to you is just be proactive and don't wait for the bad thing to happen. Just try and avoid that bad thing from happening in the first place. Whenever I go on a longer trip where I have to check my luggage, aside from the important valuables that I bring on a small carry-on, I usually bring like one day's clothing, change of socks, change of underwear, maybe if I'm going to a nice place like Miami, maybe a pair of shorts and a T-shirt, so that if indeed my luggage gets lost, I have at least a day's worth of clothing where if I have to go out and buy something or whatever. The other thing you want to do is when you get to the airport, before you leave the airport, you want to open your luggage and go through it and make sure that there is nothing missing. Because a lot of the airlines, their policies state, as soon as you leave the premises, say you go to your hotel or maybe you're going to visit your brother's house or something, the minute you leave the airport, they're no longer responsible for a claim on a lost item. So if something was stolen or that, to that effect, they are not legally responsible for that anymore.
Thank you, Anne, for the call, and good luck on your trip. I thought I read recently that some airlines are considering now, and maybe they already are doing it, charging for carry-on luggage.
Yes, there is one airline already doing it. Spirit Airlines charges for whether you check it or carry it on. We immediately, and that's been in effect for a couple of years, we immediately, called out Spirit on that policy because we think that's extremely unfair. But this is the era of air travel that we're going into. It's not just, the days of just comparing airfare are over with because, yeah, you may get a wonderful ticket price, but if you're going to be hit with, you know, all these various ancillary fees, and there are certain ancillary fees that are optional. If you don't want to get on the internet, you don't have to connect to the Wi-Fi. But, you know, if you're traveling somewhere, chances are, yeah, you need to bring luggage. So you're going to have to pay those fees. So, and then also one I mentioned a little earlier, if you want to change your flight, U.S. Airways, for example, they charge $150 to change your flight. Yeah, ouch, exactly. In some cases, that might be even more than the price of the ticket. So, again, where this is the era of air travel that we're getting into, we like to call it in a very negative tone, nickel and diming customers.
Mm-hmm.
They like to call it, you know, a la carte, with the prices that you don't have to pay for what you don't need. But in a case of luggage, in most cases, you probably do need your luggage because you need your personal items.
That's
definitely one thing to keep an eye on, Joy, is airlines doing that.
Our next caller is Catherine in Random Lake. Hi, Catherine.
Hello, how are you this morning?
Good. What happened to you?
Well, 2 years ago, I was in, it'll be 2 years in February, I was flying to the Philippines to visit my daughter, and I was pulled off the plane in Guam because my passport didn't expire more than 6 months after, you know, in my flight. And I felt I should be reimbursed for my flight, the cost of the flight from Guam to the Philippines and back again. And I complained to United, and they basically said, too bad. And I wrote to the CEO, and he didn't even bother to answer my reply. And, you know, you can't even boycott some of these things. You don't have much choice if you're flying to a spot because there's so few airlines that go to.
Yeah, how frustrating, too. Yeah.
Now, I wish I had known about this organization. I would have written to them.
Well, Brandon, what do you have to say to Catherine?
Catherine, I didn't quite understand. You were traveling with an expired passport, or your passport was about to expire?
My passport was good for a month, but it should have been good for 6 months.
It was not expired yet, but it was going to expire within 6 months of travel. I've had that happen too. I'm planning a trip to Belize, of all things, and that my passport would have expired 3 months after the travel, but it had to be good for 6 months after the travel. You know what we're talking about, Brandon?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes, I do. That's not even probably necessarily an airline issue. That's probably a State Department issue, and I don't know the intricacies behind why that would be, why they state that, but I don't believe that's an airline policy. I believe that is actually a Department of State policy. So maybe, you know, one thing you may want to do is contact your member of Congress and ask them, because what they'll do is they'll act as the conduit, and they'll contact the Department of State for you and get the explanation as to why that is. Were you denied the connection to be able to travel on to the Philippines from Guam?
Yes. Yes, I was. Yes.
Yeah,
very traumatic.
I think in that case, for the airline to refund your ticket, that would have truly been a good gesture on their part. I think you did everything you could, but I think definitely you may want to look into. And I know it's been a couple of years, and you're definitely not going to be getting any money from the airlines now. Is just to get a clearer understanding. I would definitely contact your member of Congress and ask. If they, you know, why did this happen? And it's probably because of a State Department regulation, and they'll explain to you what was the reason why.
It's interesting. The little bit of research I did on this because of this trip that I'm planning, it's certain countries will enforce or have different rules, too, because I guess they don't want you in their country with an expired passport because they want you to get out of there or something.
Right, exactly.
And it's not, it may not be just the U.S. State Department, but other countries and what their regulations are. But maybe the airline might have known that before allowing her on the first leg of the flight, but it might have been that they thought she needed to be responsible for knowing that. So, Catherine, thanks for calling. We're going to talk about more passenger rights issues coming up as we are talking about holiday travel with Brandon Muscata, who is the executive director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights. And we're welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming any travel experiences, airline travel experiences that you'd like to run by him, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again.
So who is flying home or somewhere for the holidays? We are talking about airline passenger rights as we get prepared for the holiday travel season. Lots of folks are planning on flying home for Thanksgiving. It's one of the busiest air travel times of the year. And we are talking about what to expect. We're talking about how to have a smoother experience. We're talking about our rights with Brandon McScotta, who is the Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for him, or you can email us, talk@wpr.org. I wanted to ask you, Brandon, if there's anything we should be concerned about with the news that the U.S. Justice Department has cleared the way for the merger of American and U.S. Airways. Is this good or bad news when airlines merge for passengers?
Well, Joy, when I've been on your show before, I had revealed to you that, I'm a Republican. You would think as a Republican, I would be all for, businesses being able to do certain things. Air travel, I think, is a little different. And that is, you're dealing with a captive audience. Catherine was just talking about visiting her daughter in the Philippines. Catherine could not have driven her car to the Philippines or got on a train. She has very limited options to get there. And even within the continental United States, when I was living in Los Angeles, if I needed to get home for a family emergency, you've got to get on a plane. And the unfortunate thing with what we're seeing now in air travel is, in the airline industry, is these mergers that are happening, we're being promised that the prices are going to go down, that service is going to improve, and unfortunately it's not happening. And there have been numerous mergers over the last several years, whether it's United and Northwest Airlines, some others, and even U.S. Airways before when they merged with America West. We as an organization have taken a stand against this merger. We have serious reservations about this merger, as do almost every single other airline passenger rights organization, consumer rights organization, travel organization representing various folks. The only ones who seem to be in favor of it are those who have an actual vested interest in it. Our interest as passengers is to make sure we get the lowest fare possible and get the best possible service when we purchase that ticket. So we have some very serious reservations. Unfortunately, with the Justice Department coming to an agreement, the likelihood of this merger going through increased. And if this judge signs off on it, we as passengers are probably going to be looking at one less option when we're trying to book air travel.
Yeah, apparently the U.S. Justice Department cleared the merger earlier this month after American and U.S. Airways agreed to give up gates and landing rights at several big airports. Who benefits from that?
Well, and the whole purpose of releasing gates is, gates are the airlines purchase rights to gates, and that's really what fuels the price of tickets, aside from the load of the number of seats that are in the air at any one time. So if U.S. Airways and, say, American are the two airlines in an airport, and they own all the gates, well, guess what? Then there's no competition. So what they were trying to do is get some of those gates released to be able to bring competition into the airport. Where you see the big impact is on a lot of the smaller regional airports, where you maybe only have one carrier, or what I like to call one and a half carriers, where there is another alternative, but it's a very limited flight schedule that they offer in and out. And you see those prices, going up. And I think you see prices going up overall in general. So it's just, if indeed they're merging and prices are going to go down and they're going to improve service, we would be all for it. But when we're looking at what has historically happened over the last 10 years with the other airlines that have merged, that simply has not happened. And it's a pretty clear and compelling case that it has not happened, because naturally there's been hearings before Congress every time one of these mergers has been proposed. Congressmen and women like to get their names in the paper. They call the airline CEOs up to the Hill for a testimony. The airline CEOs promised everything, it's going to be wonderful, prices are going to stay or even go down, and all these other things, and choices are going to increase, and it's just not happening. So now we're looking at two going into one, which means we have one less option when we're trying to book our travel.
A couple of quick items, too, before we end. Mary Ellen emails, as Americans continue to increase in size, other industries such as automakers, healthcare, and furniture are all increasing the size of their equipment to accommodate overweight or obese customers. Why are airlines the only industry that doesn't do this? Airplane seats just keep getting smaller and smaller. And a London design firm is in the news because it came up with a plan for adjustable airline seats. What's your take on all this?
Yes, you know, Joy, since 1959, the males in the United States, the average male weighs 25 pounds more than he did back then. The average female weighs 24 pounds more than she did back in 1959. Yet the size of airline seats have not increased, unless you're in certain select, you know, rows and whatever. The size of airline seats have not increased since that time. So we as a people are getting bigger, but the seats are not. In fact, in some cases, the seats are getting smaller. There's a wonderful resource called SeatGuru.com, where if you're booking, you're trying to decide where to fly, you can go on there, see what is the aircraft, and it'll tell you what is the size of the seat in terms of its width, but also what's the pitch, and are your knees going to be jammed up against the person in front of you. We also, as a people, are taller than we used to be back in the 1950s. So that's where that pitch comes in, very important. There are some out there, some designs out there. We have actually endorsed one whereby the seats are adjustable. I think that's an imperative thing. If the airlines are truly committed to making air travel more accessible and more customer-friendly, they have to recognize that these coach seats simply are not comfortable, and for most Americans, they just don't fit.
In our final minute, Vin in Madison wants to know whether you think it's a good idea or not that some passengers can be pre-approved to get through security faster, and it's marked on their boarding pass. Is that something we should do?
Yes, we've actually endorsed that, and there's several reasons behind that. And you actually go through a very extensive background check that they'll do. And that doesn't necessarily preclude you from getting screened at the airport. I mean, you still can be pulled aside by TSA, but, you know, they have designated lines that allow these travelers to go through. And the rationale behind it is these travelers travel so much, they can zip through the lines. Chances are, you know, that they're easier to track and see what kind of past travel history they've had in the past. Are there loopholes and other things that, you know, yeah, passengers can be concerned about? I'm sure the answer is yes, and that's why, again, they're not. It doesn't mean just because you've been approved that TSA can't screen you or do anything with you. But anything we can do to expedite security and improve security, we're all for, and the pre-check does both.
Thank you so much, Brandon, for being with us, and happy Thanksgiving. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.